The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 145. Titty the Amateur Traveler goes to Ireland. Learn about the history and culture of this rapidly changing country and where you can find a good pint and a bit of conversation. Today in the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the interview, I do have a couple stories for you. In the first news story, with the rise of the cost of airlines, especially because of fuel, we're starting to see ads in some strange places. Six international airlines have opened the door to advertisers with a new initiative that will allow ads to appear on boarding passes printed following online check-in. And in a related story, with the high cost of fuel boosting airline prices, the Eurostar is seeing quite a jump in their ridership, about 25% in their ticket sales between January and June this year. So taking the train is always an alternative. For more information about those stories, as well as some other stories, go to the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show, Nick Hoffman. And Nick is coming to us from Ireland, although, Nick, you're not originally from Ireland.
No, I'm originally from Michigan.
But you've been living in Ireland for 13 years, I think you said?
13 years, yeah. I came over here in 1995. I didn't plan on staying. I just came over for the summer, but I wound up staying then.
What drew you to Ireland and what keeps you there?
My mother is from Dublin, so I have a connection with it, and we'd come over every so often to visit family. But I always wanted to come over by myself and spend more than just a week or two exploring around. I wanted to spend a few months. So that's what I was doing in 1995 when I came over. I wanted to kind of poke around the different towns that you don't get a chance to go to on a one-week holiday and just kind of soak up what it was like to just live here rather than visit here.
Well, and that gets into sort of my usual question, which is, if I had a week to visit Ireland or 2 weeks, what would I see? And then what would I miss, too, I guess would be a good question for you since you've been there much longer.
I would actually recommend if you came over for a week to concentrate on Dublin. I know a lot of Americans, when they come over, they take like a bus tour around the country. But the country is big enough that that's kind of a whirlwind. And I think, you know, you have a day here and a day there.
Right.
And you're seeing things, but you're not really soaking it up. So I'd recommend myself concentrating on Dublin. Because there's a lot to see in Dublin, and you could fill a week easily. And then if you had sort of a longish week, 10 days, I'd fit in, say, a short trip to Galway or Cork just to get outside of Dublin and see a bit of what the rest of the country is like. Because if you're staying in Dublin, Dublin isn't really overly representative of Ireland. It's kind of like going to New York and saying you've seen the States. When you've seen Dublin, you haven't really seen Ireland, and you'd be missing what it's like in the countryside.
Right. In fact, Dublin wasn't even founded by Irishmen, as I recall.
No, the Vikings. And it was the seat of the British power
right, exactly.
When they ruled Ireland as well. So it's kind of got a different feel to it than the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. You're picking Dublin and Galway and Cork as the three places we ought to sort of concentrate on.
Yeah.
Dublin first. What would you recommend people see in Dublin?
There's a lot to see in Dublin. One of the things I'd recommend would be Dublin Castle. That's where the headquarters of the British was in the city, and it's a fantastic old castle, and you can take tours of it, and just the architecture and the rooms inside are just lovely to see. And they have historic furniture, tables where agreements were signed and that sort of thing. And then there's a separate part of it where you can go down into the foundation of the castle and see the old foundations. And in Dublin, there's rivers that have been built over. I think the River Dodder is there. So you can see the River Dodder, which you can't actually see from above ground. It's an underground river now.
Oh, interesting.
And behind Dublin Castle, then, there's a little garden. Dublin is from the Viking words Dovlin, which means dark pool. And that's the site of the actual original Black Pool that they named the city for. Except, again, of course, it's built over. It's not there, but that the site of it.
Am I in the wrong place, or is the Dublin Castle also where you could see where some of the political prisoners were held, or is that...
That's Kilmainham.
Kilmainham
jail.
Got it.
Although one of the prisoners was held there, he had been wounded in the fighting in 1916, and he was actually kept in the castle because he needed medical treatment.
Okay.
So he was kept there, but the rest were kept in Kilmainham, which is actually just up the road, and that's another great place to see because they preserved it the way it was, and they take you into the cells and that, and you can see the graffiti that was carved into the wall by the prisoners, and they take you out to the yard where some of them were executed and that. It's quite a poignant place.
And when we say prisoners, just for any context of people who don't know their Irish history, we're talking about the people who were trying to get the British to leave, basically.
That's right, yeah. The rising at Easter 1916, which was the start of the Irish actually getting their independence. It wasn't the first revolt, but it was the start
of the successful one.
So another good place would be Trinity College. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to just wander around. I think it was founded by Queen Elizabeth. I'm not sure about that, but quite old, and it's just beautiful old cobblestone walkways and lovely old buildings and some nice grassy areas. It's a nice place to wander around and just soak up the atmosphere there. That's quite near Grafton Street, so I was going to say be sure to walk up Grafton Street, kind of the main pedestrian shopping street with a lot of the expensive stores on it, but it's a nice place to walk. And that takes you up to Stephen's Green, which is a lovely little park, which is a nice place to have lunch if you buy a sandwich and just sit out if the weather's good and watch people go by and see the ducks in the pond and just relax.
And when you say buy a sandwich, that just reminds me of Dublin right now. Ireland's economy is doing very well, so it's getting to be a more expensive place to travel to, is my understanding.
That's right, yeah. I've heard different reports where it's ranked as one of the more expensive places to visit in Europe, say. It's up there, say, with Paris or Rome, I think.
And is that predominantly lodging or also eating out? Or
both, I'd say.
Okay.
I think most hotel rooms would go about 100 euros or more.
Okay.
A nice dinner out could go 30, 40, 50 euro, depending on how fancy you were going. And
sure.
Did you have wine or not?
Any budget tips for handling Dublin?
There's a chain of hostels that operate in Dublin, Cork, and Galway, and they're quite nice. I actually used them when I first came over here. The Kinlay House, that's the chain I use, but there's other hostels around, and the hostels are fairly nice, so I'd recommend using hostels in those cities. You could also use bed and breakfasts. They're less expensive than the hotels, and they're nice, because in both places you'd get to mingle with people who are from the area, and then, of course, in a hostel you meet people who are also traveling, and that can be interesting, too, meet people to go around with.
And I know some people who have stayed just a little further out on the train and then actually day-tripped into Dublin to save money.
Yeah, that's a good idea, too. Yeah, yeah. The Dart Line is one of the main trams that runs along the coast of Dublin Bay, so you could stay along the Dart Line and stay outside of the city but still get into the city fairly handily.
While we're still on Dublin, other places to see, well, any places that tourists miss? We've named a lot of places that are well-known.
Yeah.
What's your favorite hidden thing in Dublin?
Well, I was going to recommend that people take a day and get a day ticket for the Dart Line and just go up and down the Dart Line, because, as I said, it goes around Dublin Bay, and there's lots of little towns along the route that are kind of interesting to explore. So to the north of Dublin is Howth, which is an old small fishing village. So if you get the train up there, you can walk around the harbor and see the fishing boats, and there's restaurants and things there. And then if you took it all the way to the end, I think it goes to Bray, which is an old seaside resort, which is an interesting place. And then there's also places to stop along the way. Dunleary is a place where the ferry goes from Dublin to England.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lovely pier there that you could walk around on. And there's places like Docky and Killiney. There's a beach at Killiney which you could go to. If you had a day pass, you could get on and get off and just meander around and see these parts of the city that are a little bit off the beaten track.
And then anything else you would recommend to do in Dublin? We talked about things to see.
Yeah, we'll definitely go to a pub.
Okay.
Because that's where the nightlife is in Ireland, and there's pubs everywhere. So try different ones every night and see which one you like best. But that's where a lot of the nightlife is.
And what's your favorite?
My local, as they say, was the one nearest me. It was O'Brien's, kind of just outside the city center along the canal. It's kind of an old-style pub. Actually, the problem with pubs is that a lot of them have been renovated with the boom. So a lot of them have lost kind of the old Dublin charm.
Interesting, okay.
They're all kind of shiny and new and fancy. There's another one, it's O'Neill's, which is very near Trinity College, and that's a huge pub, but it's kind of in the old style.
Okay.
Which would be a good place to go. And there's another one kind of near Stephen's Green, called O'Donoghue's, and that's a very old-style pub. It hasn't been fixed up.
And an old-style pub is darker, a lot of wood. Do I have the right picture?
Exactly. Okay. Darker, a lot of wood, uncomfortable chairs.
Uncomfortable chairs, okay.
But it's the real sort of atmosphere. And they used to have what they call snugs, which is where they put kind of walls up between the seats so you could have a bit of privacy. You were sitting talking with your friends. And O'Donoghue's is the place where one of the more famous traditional bands in Dublin got their start, I think, the Dubliners.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So they've got a lot of old pictures up, drawings and photographs of them up around. And I think a lot of the pubs would have traditional music on different nights. So that's another good thing to go check out because the music's very good.
Irish music or Celtic music had a reputation of being the most popular wherever the Celts moved as they moved across Europe. So is the pub the best place then to find traditional Irish music?
I'd say so, yeah. Okay. There's sometimes concerts, say, in the National Concert Hall of the more famous traditional groups, like, say, the Chieftains.
Okay.
But the pub is kind of where your local, support your local traditional musician. That's where the pub comes in.
I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to cover in Dublin.
Near Dublin Castle, there's a great museum. I kind of like books and that kind of old manuscripts. And there's a museum there, the Chester Beatty Library. It's just behind Dublin Castle. It's a great collection of old Eastern manuscripts, like old Korans and Japanese texts.
Oh, interesting.
Something a little bit different. Most people go see the Book of Kells, but this is kind of like the Book of Kells, only Eastern. I think they have old books as well, like, say, old Italian books. And the time I was there last year, they had an exhibition on Leonardo da Vinci's manuscripts. They had some of those on display that you could look at. So it's kind of a different kind of museum.
Interesting. Okay. Well, there's certainly a long literary history in Ireland. I think a lot of people don't realize that Christianity, for instance, was reintroduced into Britain from Ireland after the Angles and the Saxons came in. But along with the preserved all of the writings from the Bible and earlier manuscripts as well.
That's right. The old monasteries all over the country.
So after Dublin, you are recommending we go to Galway?
Galway, yeah.
Okay. And Galway, do I have it in the right place? We're on the west coast?
The west coast,
okay.
Yeah.
So we've gone from Dublin on the east coast to Galway on the west coast.
That's right. It's about a 3-hour train ride.
Okay.
And it's just a nice place to spend a weekend, say, to wander around and like that, explore the pubs and just take in the atmosphere. And from there, you can go on a trip over to the Aran Islands, which I think are the most western part of Ireland. There's three of them. The biggest one is Inishmore. And you can either fly out, I think, or you can take a boat. It's just an interesting place to visit. It's a very sort of stark place, very rocky islands, and it's really removed from, say, the hustle-bustle, cosmopolitan life of Dublin.
Okay.
It's kind of getting back to old, old Ireland.
So I'm picturing very green sheep, rocks. Do I have the right mental picture in my head?
Yeah, not so green on the islands.
Not so green on the islands, okay.
But say in the west, in the country in general, yeah, very, very green because it rains a lot.
Right.
So it keeps the grass very lush.
Anything else in the Galway area we should not forget?
I can't think of a particular site to see. It's just a great place to meander around and explore. It's more the ambiance. And
okay.
There's lots of lovely little pubs and lovely places to eat and you're along the coast as well, and the light, it's a photography, so the light is fantastic out there, and nearly every picture you take turns out to look really well.
That sounds great. And then you mentioned food. What are we eating when we're in Ireland? We're eating pub grub, or are you recommending something else, non-traditional?
In Dublin, say, it's actually hard, I found, to actually have Irish food anymore.
Interesting.
Because with the boom,
sure.
There's lots of ethnic restaurants that have started up, so you can have Thai or Mexican or Indonesian or Vietnamese food or French food very easily, but it's actually hard to find Irish food, I think. The best places to get Irish food would be, say, in the pub for lunch or maybe in a hotel. They'd be still doing the more traditional food, which would be things like, say, shepherd's pie, which is ground up beef, carrots, a little bit of a stew with potatoes baked on top of them, mashed potatoes,
mm-hmm.
bacon and cabbage, or corned beef and cabbage.
Sure.
My wife wanted me to mention, she's from Cork, and there's a thing that's very, very traditional. It's tripe and onions.
Okay. You had me with the corned beef and cabbage and lost me with the tripe, but...
No, I'm not entirely sure what tripe is.
Stomach.
Yeah, I think it's sheep stomach, all right.
Yeah.
So I can't recommend it, but she recommended it as a very traditional food. And there's different kinds of stews, you know, Irish lamb stew or beef and Guinness stew, or those kind of things are all very traditional as well. If you like beer, try the Guinness. It's very thick and takes some getting used to, but it's lovely. And Dublin is the best place to have it. And then down in Cork, the Cork version of Guinness is Murphy's. So in Dublin has Guinness, and in Cork has Murphy's.
You're talking about the international food in Dublin. It's kind of ironic that after so many years of having to go abroad to find work, that Ireland is now importing foreign workers because there are so many jobs. So things, times have changed.
It's been great for the country in a way, because a lot of people who did move abroad have been able to move home,
sure,
either from England or the States or Australia. And then, as you say, a lot of foreign people have moved in. There's a lot of Chinese in Dublin, and a lot of Polish people and people from other areas of Eastern Europe have moved over to Ireland as well. So it's actually become fairly international.
Right.
Place
just
to be.
Relatively recently.
Yeah, very, very recently. And there's now, it's even in, say, West Cork, where I go out to work, it's not uncommon to see Polish shops and Hungarian shops in the little villages, you know, in little traditional villages, and they have a Polish shop.
Interesting. And then Cork, you mentioned as our third stop here, and you're living outside of Cork then?
I'm actually living in the city of Cork,
okay,
and I work outside. I commute into West Cork. Cork's a nice place as well. And again, it's about a 3-hour train ride. There's also cheap internal flights with Ryanair, so mm-hmm, if you were stuck for time, you could fly down a bit quicker.
Okay. And what would we do in or see in Cork?
The thing I would really recommend to see in Cork is the English Market. It's an old-style market, a couple hundred years old. It's a very lively place. There's lots of merchants selling everything from organic vegetables to beef and lamb, and then there's a few fish stalls, some wine merchants. There's not a bakery on site, but, you know, people that sell bread and cakes and pastries, and it's a very lively place. It's almost like a medieval market because it's all very closely packed in together.
Mm-hmm.
You probably won't want to go in and necessarily buy anything because it's geared at people, you know, cooking things up at home, but it's a great place to wander through and, again, soak up the atmosphere. And there's a great restaurant there as well, which would serve some of those traditional foods that I was talking about a while ago, the Farmgate, and it's upstairs in the English Market. It's a very good place.
If I were to come to Ireland, which is actually getting very near the top of my list right now, what
yeah
would be my biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise when I came over was the way Irish people speak, which may sound funny, but there's a great variety in the accents,
okay,
which surprised me. A Dublin accent is very different from a Cork accent, and it's very different from a Kerry accent or a Donegal accent. And living in Dublin, I got into where I understood the different Dublin accents fairly well, but now that I'm in Cork, I'm kind of starting over. So just the variety of accents took me by surprise. Say, the way people speak to each other, the language is often very colorful.
in
various ways, which I won't say on your show. And also, Irish, of course, was originally the language here, the Gaelic. And although most people speak English now, the way of thinking in the Irish and the sort of the structure of the Irish has kind of bled through into the way people speak in English. People will say things in kind of roundabout, colorful ways, quite different from the way Americans would speak, say.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of lends a poetry to even just buying bread in a shop.
Interesting.
Another thing that surprised me was in Ireland, they engage in this thing called slagging, which usually happens between friends. It's basically teasing a person or making fun of a person, but not in a mean way. It's
mm-hmm
sort of an affectionate thing. It can be quite entertaining. It relies a lot on witticisms and plying things and not doing it justice, but it's actually really great to listen to the two people slagging each other and seeing which can come off best, you know. It's very funny.
Interesting.
Very verbal place, Ireland.
Any warning you would give about traveling to Ireland?
Parts of Dublin can be a bit dangerous. I think they're still safer than some American cities, but especially if you're out, say, on a Friday or Saturday around the O'Connell Street area, I would just be a bit mindful of where you are and who's around you. And one thing I'd recommend is bring a sweater, even if it's the summer, because the weather is very unpredictable.
Okay.
You can't rely on that it's going to be a nice, warm, sunny day. Just because it's June, it can get quite cold and chilly. At the moment, though, we're having nice weather, which is makes a nice change.
Very good. As we start to wind this down, your best day in Ireland?
Oh, I don't know that now offhand.
The day that you can remember that just is most quintessential Irish.
it's hard to pin down a day. The great thing about somewhere like Dublin is you sort of fall into little adventures just by wandering around.
Okay.
And there's always something happening. For instance, you might go for a walk and find that there's a race on the Liffey, either a swimming race or the rowing that the mm-hmm. different colleges do. You know, there might be a rowing race up the river, or there might be a street festival with music, and that you don't necessarily know what you're going to run into when you go out. So that's a great thing. And some of my funner moments have been that. But I just thought of a time for St. Patrick's Day mm-hmm. when I was first here. I was going down to the parade to visit a friend of mine. And they had the main street all blocked off with barriers on either side. And I needed to get over to the other side to meet up with my friend. And I found a policeman, a guard, they call them. I went up to him and I asked him, how can I get across to the other side? And he just looked at me and said, what are you asking me for? And I didn't actually understand it at the time, but there wasn't actually anywhere to cross. Because I was assuming that, say, you know, in the States, they would have right. particular parts where you would be allowed to cross and, mm-hmm. you know, policemen would be there watching. But they didn't actually have that. And he knew that, and he assumed I knew that. He then didn't want to say, just hop over the fence and run across, because he was a policeman and he'd get in trouble. And he couldn't understand how I didn't see that that was what I should do. But of course, I was just here for about a year at that stage, and I hadn't quite gotten into the Irish thing of that sometimes you just make up your own rules and jump over the fence and run across through the parade yourself, you know?
Most memorable person you've met?
Well, I suppose my wife.
Oh, well.
Because my wife is Irish, so I met
Hence
her
the
over
what
here.
Keeps you in Ireland, but...
Yeah, that's what keeps me here, all right. I stayed because I enjoyed it, and then I only met
sure.
her a few years ago.
But you better answer that, so really that's the...
That's the right
answer to the question.
Most memorable person is definitely my wife, anyway.
If you had to summarize, and this is the hardest one, Ireland in three words, how would you summarize it?
Beautiful.
Okay.
Cold.
Okay.
And great fun. Yeah, that's two words, but...
We'll give you that.
I'll stretch it out to four. Yeah. It's a really fun place to be. It's a very humane place, you know. People are really interested in people, you know. So as a tourist, they'd be very interested in you and where you're from and why you've come over and what it's like where you are from. And they'd want to know everything about you, really.
Okay.
And great sense of humor here.
Anything else we should know before we pack our bags and head to Ireland?
I was going to say, if you had more than a week to visit, to be sure to go out to the west, say West Cork, Kerry, Clare, those kind of areas.
Because Ring of Kerry. The
countryside is very wild and beautiful out there. Yeah, the Ring of Kerry and places like, say, Gugambara in West Cork. It's an old, I think there was a monastic settlement there, and it's just a beautiful place. There's hills all around. It's a glen with this lake and an old church in the middle of it, and there's lots of these little beautiful places out through the west. The only thing is you'd have to drive to get to a lot of them.
Sure.
So if you're driving, be careful, because the roads are very narrow, and the drivers are a bit aggressive, and they like to speed. So it can be a bit hair-raising for an American driver.
I understand. I just wrote an article on one of the travel blogs about driving in Crete, where they take a 2-lane highway and make it a 4-lane highway. So,
yeah, it's a bit like that. They take something that might be a 1-lane road in the States and put 2 lanes on it. You know,
yeah, sure.
Sometimes there's a line painted down the middle and sometimes there's not. And often you might have to get nearly into the ditch to let a big truck go by you or something like that. It takes nerves of steel.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about your adopted home in Ireland.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me on.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that is a new set of downloadable travel guides from Boots and All Travel. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, but basically Boots and All, which is a site usually catering to backpackers, has a set of travel guides for many different cities around the world that you can download in a PDF form. So if you want to have a smallish travel guide, I think the guide for Dublin is around 11 pages that you want to put on your laptop rather than carrying a book. That's something to think about. They're free, so if you don't like them, you didn't pay anything for them, so check that out at the link in the show notes. In news from the community, I have three different comments that I wanted to comment on left on the Singapore show. One was from Bombshell in Atlanta. It says, that was quite informative. I shouldn't listen to any more podcasts because my places to visit list will grow incredibly high. Tell me about it. Loved it. I can't believe what happened in the last interview. I'm not sure what you're talking about. There is something that happened in the last interview, but I don't think I mentioned in the show. I actually lost all of the audio for my part of the interview and had to completely record it. It was one of the worst experiences that I've ever had in terms of a podcast edit, but I'm hoping no one was able to tell from the show itself. Gary wrote from Darlington, England, and said, Hi, Chris. I've been listening to your podcast for about a month now. I'm keen to hear what new podcasts you are uploading. I've been to Singapore on our honeymoon 10 years ago. I see from pictures things have changed quite a bit since we were there. I really do enjoy listening to the places I've been. It gives a special meaning to everything. One day, I mean to upload photos of where we've been over the years, but just don't seem to have the time. So I applaud you with your podcast and the time and effort it must take. It does take quite a lot of effort, Gary. And I, like you, also enjoy hearing about places that I haven't been as well as the places I've been. And I'm a little surprised that I get this as a theme from people who really enjoy listening to places they've been before. And I didn't expect that, even though I myself am the same way. But you are not alone, Gary. And then I also heard from one of our listeners, and I don't think I got a name here, who wrote from Singapore and said, been listening to the show for a few weeks and was pleasantly surprised to see an episode on Singapore, my country. And a few corrections. Barbecue pork, which is bak kwa, the things that people queue up for around Chinese New Year, is not really in dishes. It's eaten on its own. When you ride on the boat quay, they're not junks, but bum boats. Junks are traditional Chinese sailing ships, and bum boats are small and motorized. Not all Singaporeans love durian. The Sultan Mosque has Middle Eastern influence, not Indonesian. Next to no one speaks British English here, but rather Singlish, a local Creole, which tourists can find very hard to understand. The MRT is easy to manage, but not everywhere can be accessed by it, unlike the tube, certainly. All prices are quoted in Singapore dollars. Quoting the exchange rate would help. It's true, it would help. One of the reasons that I don't worry too much about exchange rates is people listen to the show over the course of years. We still have people this week who listen to some of the earliest shows, and certainly over the last 3 years that I've been doing this show, the exchange rates have changed quite a lot. The tallest hotel in Southeast Asia is not called Swiss Hotel anymore, but the Fairmont. It got renamed a few years ago. And hawker food in Singapore is not street food. Almost all of it is housed in proper buildings. I think that's a terminology problem there. I think I called it street food. And street food for me is anything that you walk up to either at a cart, a vendor, or an open shop and buy and walk away with rather than sit down and eat. So that was probably my misunderstanding there. With that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. If you have any comments, feel free, like the three people that I mentioned, to leave them on the episode at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.